Welcome to the Bold Departure Podcast. Our focus is on Second Amendment rights and the debate taking place involving gun laws, gun safety, gun crime, and all related gun issues. We have entertaining gun-related news and, from time to time, guest interviews. Now, let's get started. Here are your hosts, John and Michael.
Welcome back to the special edition of the Bold Departure Podcast, episode number 17. We are on the show with my usual co-host, Mike, and a special guest today, Corey Vaughn, who some of you might know. He's made several appearances on other podcasts. And we have a very exciting agenda for you today. We're going to be starting out with a story about some crazy New Jersey politicians. We're going to talk a little bit about the recent decision from the Third Circuit Court of Appeals. And a little bit about a movie that was shown in North Jersey. That in itself was a special edition, a special viewing up there. But first, as always, we'll be kicking it off with the words of wisdom.
And episode 17's words of wisdom come from Uncle Ted Nugent. Every study on crime and or firearms proves time and time again that 99.99999% of American gun owners do not commit crimes or use our firearms in any dangerous or improper way.
That's 99.99999. Did I get it?
Yes. Okay. Five nines.
Excellent. Five nines. Excellent. What do you think, Corey? Uncle Ted.
Uncle Ted made an appearance in Assaulted as well. It's kind of me going along the lines of that same point.
Actually, I think that's why Mike picked it.
Oh, really? I'm going to stop talking now. I'm going to go back to the fire.
Yes. So, we got Corey in today. Corey is has been down with the struggle. I'll put it that way for quite a while now. So, oh man. So I met you through NJ2AS. We've been to a few events together now.
Yeah, the big one was the rally.
Yeah,
and a handful of meetings and other assorted fight for your rights kind of goodness that we've been up to the last few years.
Right. And now I know you had an official position with NJ2AS for a while. Are you still doing that? You're like distributing media or something?
I was distributing media for a while. Now I'm kind of handling some of the political work.
Okay. Excellent.
We're actually down in your neck of the woods, the NJ2AS is supporting Nikki Trunk against Steve Sweeney.
Yes. She's a little bit closer. She's actually not in my district. But right.
Closer to you than she is to me.
Yes. Yes. She is in my area.
Right. We're working on getting volunteers down there to work with the campaign. We're encouraging.
I'll volunteer.
Mike says if you guys send a bus out to get him from Denver, that he will be right over.
Yeah, we're looking to, Steve Sweeney, politically, whereas most of us didn't agree with most of what he did, he was always friendly to the gun owners and hunters, so everybody kind of stayed.
He voted the right way. He had an A rating.
Yeah. And he had, and he'd earned it up until just very recently.
Yep.
And then he jumped in whole hog with the Joe Biden buy a shotgun and shoot it through the door mentality.
So, and I don't know if you're going to be able to get too specific. Do you guys have any like specific dates or anything planned regarding that that election down there?
Well, actually, right now they are open 9 to 9. 7 days a week for phone calling and whatnot. We're working on anybody can go down there and just tell them they're from the NJ2AS to do some volunteer time. We're going to try and formalize that a little bit. I'm working actually with the campaign themselves. And then we're getting phone lists, waiting on phone lists from them for the people who are out of the area. Like for me to get there is a 2-hour drive.
Right.
But they're going to give us a list of phone numbers we can call.
You know, I'll
at home phone banking.
I'm going to throw it in there. I've been trying to figure out a way that I could help out Nikki's campaign because, well, for one thing, I would like to find out more about Nikki myself because basically all I know about her right now is she's running against Sweeney and that's enough. So
right, that's she took the time to meet with Frank Fiamingo and Bob Barish.
Oh, that's a huge deal that she would meet with them.
Right when she first started running, I was looking to contact them, and I couldn't find the numbers. I actually had a friend of mine who's on the New Jersey, the Monmouth County Republican Committee, pull her elect form. So the Board of Elections form has, it's public information. It's not like he had to dig around for it. But he pulled the form, and there's a contact phone number on there. I called down, spoke to one of her running mates, and as soon as I got on the phone, I said it was from the NJ2AS. His first words out of his mouth, he goes, "I've been watching the news, and I've been waiting for your call."
Oh, you know what? Nice. I like hearing this. So as soon as we have some sort of like arrangement where we know like what we can do to help out, I would love to publish that on the blog or...
Oh, absolutely.
You know, whatever. We actually have a voting information page for New Jersey now, so
okay, good.
If we can get information for there, we'd love that.
The other thing I would encourage everybody to do is make sure you're registered. You can go to the New Jersey Board of Elections website, type in your name, your zip code, and it'll tell you if you're registered to vote.
We have a link to that on the bolddeparture.com voting information page. We have a link to the MI Registered tool.
Yeah, that's because, you know, I think what they say, right around the last election, about 25% of people who thought they were registered weren't.
Yes.
Which, I mean, I voted in every election, you know, from everything from dog catcher to president.
Yeah, if you've been voting all the time, you're in pretty good shape. But if you haven't voted for a couple of years, you might want to.
Yeah, you know, I thought it was always, I guess, kind of urban legend that if you missed a presidential election, they dropped you from the rolls. But having actually worked as a challenger on the election, still seeing my grandmother on there who died 7 years ago proves that not to be true.
Well, wait, you were working an election as a challenger and then you saw that there was someone
you
knew?
Yeah, I saw a list of names, and two of them were my grandmother and great aunt, both deceased. Going
on still on the voter rolls.
Yep.
Wow.
And I said to the people there from the Board of Elections, I said, you know, my grandmother's on here and she died. They're like, oh, sorry to hear that. I was like, she died 7 years ago. And they went, oh. I was like, don't you ever clean these up? Right. And they just kind of went, really not. And they just kind of hedged. I'm like, what do I do to, like, do I have to send a letter? Do I have to send a copy of a death certificate to the county clerk? Like, what, right. How do you do this? You know, and I, you know, most people, you know, that whole controversy, true the vote. And
right.
It's clearly not done. I mean, I have, in a very personal firsthand experience, seen it.
It needs more integrity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It, you know, I have to show ID to buy a bottle of Jack Daniels or a firearm, generally not in the same time. Why not?
That's quite the store.
Have you been listening to NRA news recently?
That's ATF. So it should be a convenience store, not an agency.
They had a story. There's a guy in Washington, D.C. on the city council who wants Living Social to stop selling deals where people go shoot in the morning and then drink in the afternoon. Because he says that exhibits like unreasonable firearms ownership, and you're not being responsible or something. And
right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we're supposed to drink and then shoot?
I don't know.
Well, there is a range down in Carolina. It made some news earlier in the year. They have a bar.
Oh wow!
And the thing is, you go, you shoot, you do your things, you case lock, and then you check your guns with them,
right?
And then you can go to the bar. Once you enter the bar, you can't go back into the range. It's right. The door goes one way. But it is there, and their whole point is that if you're making an evening of it, if you're out with your friends, if you're out with your wife, you can go then sit down and right. have an evening.
Yep.
As opposed to just go to the range, pack up, and run home.
Yeah, that's cool. I like that. So topic number one, shooting down planes. who was there? So we had some New Jersey politicians head out to exhibit an AR-50, a 50 caliber weapon, and they had a plane flying around overhead. And what they were trying to say was that Governor Chris Christie has to sign the gun control bills, because without these new gun control bills, someone who's on the terror watch list could purchase the AR-50 and shoot down a plane. Now, I will give them a little bit of credit in that there is a caveat that they weren't talking about an airliner. They were talking about like a small single prop. But at the same time, they seem to believe that a person could shoot down an airplane with a bolt action rifle. Thoughts, commentary?
Well, there's precedence for that. The state of New Jersey has already banned small handheld laser devices because you can take down a plane with them.
That you could blind the pilot with the laser, right?
Yes.
Yes.
So, I mean, there is precedent for saving our airline traffic from the awful technology that's out there. You know, then again, I'd like to see them show any instance that it's ever happened. Ever, anywhere.
I'd like to see an experiment where they try to shoot down some kind of plane or like a model plane, like, you know, you do it to scale.
Sure.
I would like to see, they could get the best sniper that they could find, and I want him to shoot down a model plane with a rifle.
Could they do it more fun and make it a drone?
A drone would be better. Yes, absolutely. I'd love to see him try and do it, because, you know, there's a reason that the military uses automatic weapons, okay? If you're going to try, like, if you're watching any series, you know, from, what was it, the World War II videos, Victory at Sea and all that stuff, if you're watching those guys try to take down planes, you point out one dude there that had a bolt-action rifle. There isn't one. They're shooting things in the air that either are fully automatic or they explode when they get close to the plane.
You know, I just thought of an instance where they might be able to say that something like this has happened, and that would be the Red Baron being shot down by a company of infantrymen. That's what they say happened. They couldn't prove it.
I thought the Red Baron was shot down by a dog on a red house.
From what I remember, it was a company of infantrymen that claimed that they shot him down.
All right.
But that's the only thing that I can think of where somebody's shot at an airplane with a bolt action or even a semi-automatic rifle.
Well, I mean, if it's even remotely possible to do, then why are we spending the money on surface-to-air missiles that surface-to-air shoulder-fired missiles for guys in the field? And if all you need is a guy with a Barrett, wouldn't that save us a whole lot of tax money?
That's true. Maybe we should implement this on the White House. Take all their air defense down and just put guys on the roof with Barretts.
There you go. Done.
Okay, so we had Linda Stender, State Senator Nicholas Scutari, and of course our friend Brian Miller was there. Yeah. So, Mike,
Brian.
When Mike and I were talking about this earlier this week, we were actually talking about the... Didn't you break out the Army manual and talk about defending against an air assault?
Yes, I do have an Army manual that's air defense for ground troops.
And what was their first recommendation?
So what it basically says is that everybody in your unit, including your, because we're military police officers and we had 50 caliber machine guns, that we were to...
Those were M2s?
Yes, M2s. And we were to aim... All the soldiers in the unit are to aim at a point in the flight path in front of the plane and fire full automatic fire until the plane flies through that area and repeat until the plane is shot down. So it's not just one time. It's multiple times.
Yeah. So this is probably the most crazy thing I've read in a long time.
I think a lot of it too goes to the fact that the people who are trying to legislate this have no concept of how any of these tools work.
Well, and yeah, I mean, if you look at them...
Your Ma Deuce and your Barrett shoot the same round.
Yes, they do.
So, you know, hey, they use the Deuces to take down planes in World War II. They use them. It's in the Army manual. So what's the difference? You know...
There's a big difference.
Well, apparently the
I know that.
Apparently the AR-2 is a magical death talisman that when you orient it,
the way these things work.
Well, wasn't their first argument about the commission of crimes or something like that with the 50 caliber?
The commission of crimes?
Yeah, weren't they concerned about crimes, or what was the whole reasoning behind 50 caliber ban?
I don't think there was ever a reason on the fact that it's just too powerful and too dangerous and could do too much damage.
Yeah, it's too big a gun. Nobody needs a 50 caliber.
Because generally when I'm thinking smash and grab in a liquor store or sticking up a gas station, it's the guy with the $12,000, 32-pound, 6.5-foot rifle that I'm concerned with.
Well, see, there's the other thing, too, is they don't seem to understand that while the round may be common, you know, a 50 BMG between the Ma Deuce and the AR-50, it's not the same round that's used in a 50 caliber Desert Eagle.
Right. Or the Smith & Wesson 500.
Right. So,
no, it's... Right now, I think the way the bill that's sitting on Christie's desk is anything 50 caliber.
And then there's a measure related to the...
it's like 12,000 foot-pounds of energy.
Yeah, muzzle energy. Yeah.
So even though clearly your Desert Eagle or your 50 Smith is well below that 12,000 threshold,
it's a
50 cal, so it's gone. Any right. round between 50 and 60 caliber was there. Designation. I'm now waiting for the Desert Eagle 49 to come out.
Well, what about anything over a 60 caliber?
No, 60. Anything over, you're okay, because that's generally a muzzle loader or a shotgun round.
This is a .49999.
Yep.
So what you're saying is I have to build myself a 61 caliber semi-automatic rifle?
You should be okay, unless as long as you stay under the threshold in the... muzzle energy.
This is silliness.
That is.
It is. It's absurdity, because none of it has anything to do with crime, criminals, or who's committing your acts of violence.
So is this to establish another precedent for a new form of incrementalism? So now, 5 years from now, it'll be the 45 is too big?
Well, it's the first one actually attacking a size. I mean, we do have bans in by name and by similarity to a named rifle.
Yes.
Like, you can't have any rifle with the Galil name on it, New Jersey.
Right.
Why? I mean, there's 25 rifles with the Galil name on it. You can't have anything called an Uzi. So I get a semi-automatic 9mm pseudo rifle called a Bob, and it's okay.
Yeah, that's fine.
Mac-10.
There was a guy arrested walking down a street in Newark with a Mac-10 the other day. Just walking down the street, it was in his hand. People went ballistic.
I don't see anything wrong with that.
No, I don't either.
Oh, that's the gun that caused the rise of Brian Miller. So.
Oh, is that the Mac-10?
Yeah, I have a personal loathing of the Mac-10 for that and that reason only. That and, you know, I don't think I could shoot it down and hit the ground. The thing's such a piece of garbage.
Yes. What they say, the CIA had a saying for it. If you're in a fight in a phone booth, it's an effective weapon.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I love that.
You know, it's a 3.5-inch barreled, fully automatic block of metal.
Did we just go from talking about the absurdity of a band on a 50 caliber to just generally being gun snobs? Is that what we're doing right now?
Oh, yeah, that's a production model. Mine's special.
That's right. So I'd say it's probably safe to say that we all agree that banning firearms on the basis that they're gonna shoot down a plane or whatever other crazy claims people that have absolutely no idea what they're talking about want to make is a fruitless endeavor.
Oh, absolutely. Actually, and then Mythbusters covered shooting down a plane from the inside with a handgun, you know, the depressurization myth. And apparently that doesn't happen for real either. That's more along the lines of the movies.
You know, that's something I've thought about, and since you've seen the Mythbusters episode on this, maybe I'll ask you now, just as an aside to our topic. If you're shooting supersonic ammo in a pressurized environment, is there any additional concern for ear damage to the people in the plane?
They didn't cover that, but I'm assuming they had head gear on. So,
okay, I would love to hear someone address that. I'm just curious.
Well, I mean, if it's a sealed pressurized environment, I'm assuming the shockwave is just going to bounce rather than dissipate.
Right.
Either way, I don't want to be on a plane where
that would be shooting. Yeah, I wouldn't want to be either, but that would be my biggest concern. You know, like you're saying, you know, if they hit the window of the plane and it's going to depressurize, like, I'm not worried about that. My concern would be, are they going to pop my eardrums?
Oh yeah. But I mean, given the fact of when air marshal's actually going to pull his gun, it probably your choices are popped eardrums or crashed plane.
That's not much of a choice.
It's either going to be really quiet for a long time,
yeah,
or you know,
or it's going to be really quiet for a long time.
Really quiet for a long time.
All right. So I think we're good. I think we're good on that one. We'll take a break for a few moments and listen to some music. What do you say?
Sounds good to me.
All right. So this will be some music here. We got something going by our friend Dan Samartano, who I was actually able to message on Facebook this week and thank. Finally, I just got, I'm a terrible person. And hopefully Mike said we're going to be doing some more from him soon, but until then we have a few songs that we can play, so yeah. And again, that was our friend Dan Samartano with his song 17. I know that I enjoy, and I'm sure you guys do too. And we're going to come up on our topic number two, which is the decision out of the Third Circuit Court of Appeals, determining that the justifiable need clause is not going to be struck down as we would hope. And the decision was 2-1 with a majority opinion that was everything that we would expect it to be. But a pleasant surprise in the dissenting opinion, which I wrote a piece about on the website earlier this week. Very strongly worded in certain places. And I think is going to be helpful when it comes to getting this taken up by the Supreme Court. So, Corey, any additional thoughts regarding the Third Circuit Court of Appeals?
It was exactly what I expected to come out of the court from New Jersey. Now it goes. It's gonna move it on to the full panel of the Circuit Court, and then hopefully it'll fall in with the rest of the rulings that have come out of different states that are conflicting.
So you're predicting a rehearing en banc?
Oh yeah, we're going. It's definitely going up to the full panel of the Circuit Court.
Okay, so you think it'll go to the full panel instead of going straight to the Supremes?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay,
and then we'll have another ruling that is contradicting other rulings from around the country. Eventually, the Supreme Court's going to have to take it up. I would actually be surprised if they don't do so soon. I think part of the reason they didn't take the last batch of cases was they weren't going to do it in an election year. I just don't think the Supreme Court was going to take up something of that magnitude in an election year.
You know, that's an interesting thought. I had thought that none of those cases were as clean as the Illinois case would have been. And I think they might have been hoping for the Illinois case just because it would have been so clean going for like a total ban on carry.
Right.
Rather than a discretionary issue.
Well, I mean, then there's discretionary issue and there's this discretionary issue. Massachusetts has a discretionary issue. But people, citizens, guys walking down the street can get permits.
It can happen, right, right. It, New Jersey is a de facto ban. State. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Well, the New Jersey thing came down to they use justifiable need, which is in the legislation, as justifiable cause. That's how they define it. Justifiable cause being your reason for using self-defense in a momentary situation.
Right. Urgent necessity to defend your life.
Right. So, guy breaks in my house, threatening me and my kids, I can use deadly force. If I don't meet that threshold Tuesday at 3 o'clock on the walking down the street, I can't have a defensive weapon with me.
Yes.
So, I mean, even in the, what was it, Mueller? No, not Mueller. Yeah, Mueller.
It was Mueller.
The guy was kidnapped.
Right.
When he came back, the reason he was denied his carry permit was that if he was in such danger, he would have already been killed.
Oh, my.
So if he was actually in a situation that rose to the level requiring him to carry a defensive weapon on any given day, he would have already been injured or killed.
But somehow 1,300 people have qualified under that standard, right?
Well, they do because they're professional permits.
Oh, are those all professional permits?
Not all, but I mean the lion's share of them.
Really?
Like Keith Bratcher is a security guard for UMDMJ.
Right.
He works for Rutgers. He's an armed officer for them. He has a carry permit to carry his gun related to his job.
See, when they were throwing that 1,300 number around, I always thought that was not the professional permits. I thought that was the connected and, you know, your senators and your guys.
There's a number. I mean, that's all the permits.
Okay.
What that doesn't count, I don't think, is your retired law enforcement.
Right.
And a lot of your guys who are professional guards, truck drivers, you know, the Brinks guys, a lot of them are retired officers. So that's a whole different class of permit, as far as I'm concerned.
That's under the LEOSA or whatever they call it. Yeah. So
we're talking 1,300 people. Probably, I would assume 75% of those, when they get done with their shift, whatever their shift happens to be,
not allowed to carry.
That goes away.
Yep.
You know, it used to be, my father worked as a special summer police officer in Seabright when my family lived in Seabright. And he was a peace officer, so he could carry at work, but unlike the regular police, when his, you know, come 6 o'clock, whatever his shift was over, his pistol got locked up in his locker.
Right.
as opposed to the other guys who would then carry it the rest of their
time. So the band is worse than even I thought.
Yeah, and I mean, you have a May issue state. Like, Alabama's a May issue state. But you're going to get a permit if you rise to the appropriate level. Even Pennsylvania, in the city of Philadelphia, they are technically May issue because they can deny you on poor moral character.
Right, right.
Which in a lot of cases, in a lot of historical ways, poor moral character meant person of color. Oh. And that's how it was used. I mean, that's really the basis of a lot of that.
Right.
Which was covered in the movie Assaulted.
Which we'll be getting to in a moment. So, Mike, any big takeaways from the decision for you?
Not really.
No?
Like Corey said, it was pretty much expected from the court. But I did like the, what do you call it? The rebuttal.
The dissent.
The dissent. It was very nicely written.
Yes. I liked how he took his dissent and at certain points directly challenged the majority opinion's reasoning. And then I saw the majority had responded to him somewhat in their majority opinion. But I liked how he kind of challenged them on their reasoning, particularly when he said that the New Jersey hadn't provided any evidence at all for them to consider under intermediate scrutiny, and there's no basis for them to say that they met their burden there. So I thought that was really interesting that he would be that pointed with them, but I don't know. I don't know what it's like to be a judge. I don't know how closely they work together. So it sounds like that's going to do it for topic number two. We're going to take a short break and then come back with topic number three, the movie Special Viewing of Assaulted in North Jersey. Kick it off with topic number three. And this is going to be about the movie Assaulted with the fine thespian, a great actor, being the narrator in Ice-T. I know his work on television has always been exceptional. So, Assaulted. We've seen reviews. I've seen people talking about how much they want to go see it on Fandango there. But here to tell us about how the movie is, someone with a, I think, a worthwhile opinion, or at least someone I'll trust to make an opinion on it, Corey, and this is why we invited you on today. So let us know what you thought of the movie there.
You know, like a lot of documentaries, it's kind of preaching to the choir, and I don't think anybody's going to go see it who's not already interested in Second Amendment rights. So it does play to that audience, and that's who the movie's for. I don't see a lot of people taking the time who are outside the movement, as it were, to spend an hour and a half and take it in and do anything but look to say, oh no, it's just gun nuts doing gun nuts stuff. But really, the points that I took away from it is that up until the very recent past, you know, a kid walking down the street who had bought a shotgun at the hardware store was nothing up until 1968. You could buy one at, you know, the Ace Hardware down the road. It was not a big scary thing. People hunted, people target shot. I mean, I know we have a rifle that was my father's that he and his brother bought at a Woolworth's at a, you know, five and dime off the shelf. It's a sporterized British Enfield World War II surplus rifle.
Right.
That when they were kids, they went out and bought for $20 or whatever it was at the time, and that was that.
So does the movie talk about that history at all, or is it from like because it's it seems to be the gun rights issue as a civil rights case.
Right.
So does it focus on like from the 1950s forward, or how does that timeline work for the film?
They cover quickly the history,
okay,
up until the Lyndon Johnson Gun Control Act and the California ban on open carry of loaded firearms, which I think preceded the actual Gun Control Act of 68. Always pointing to an event used by the anti-gunners to, we need this because of
X. Or Y, right?
Yeah,
name and X and Y were individual specific events.
Yep, the California Gun Control Act, they pointed to the Black Panthers marching on the state capitol in Sacramento, entering and occupying the capitol for a period of time with loaded weapons. Mysteriously, right after that, the ban on the open carry of loaded weapons came into California.
Okay.
The Gun Control Act of 68 or 69, the federal one, came in off of the race riots that happened those years. They pointed specifically to Newark, New Jersey, and Detroit.
Right.
And New Jersey's own gun control scheme came into play after the Newark riots.
Right. And that was that 68?
67, 68. 68,
yeah.
And then ours really, I think, landed in 69.
Right.
And, you know, the I think a large point the movie was trying to make is that gun control from its real start, which is the 1928 Firearms Act, was always set up to leave anybody more or less wealthy could work around it. I mean, a $200 tax stamp on a Class 3 weapon doesn't sound like a big deal now, but in 1934, $200 was
a significant
big
money.
Deal.
Yeah,
it was a significant absolutely. Amount of money. I mean, you're talking a half a payment for a, you know, Model T at the time. You know, that $200 would go a long way. But so, you know, your average citizen could no longer go down and buy a Thompson. Right. But anybody wealthy and privileged could still handle that.
Or, you know, if you're making money by selling alcohol illegally, you know.
But, I mean, who's, you know, if you have a criminal past and you're a bootlegger.
Right.
Who's, you know, are you really going to apply for your tax stamp and take the 6 months of background check?
Yeah, that's true.
And in very much the same way now, you know, the average criminal who's carrying and buying a gun. I mean, they're not going to, you know, a licensed dealer and filling out their permit to purchase a pistol and getting it in the same place you through the same pipeline you get your legal drugs or any of the rest of the, you know, criminal enterprise that is there. And, you know, they carried it through showing that if you're either wealthy or connected, you can have, you know, if you're friends with the judge, your carry permit's more likely than the average citizen.
Right.
And that a lot of it is, and a lot of it grew out of Jim Crow laws and things of that nature. No idea. That a lot of the... those laws came out of the, you know, the Jim Crow South, and that's how they spread around, and they went from slave codes to black codes to gun control laws. Is each, you know, you couldn't have slave codes anymore, so they went to black codes. They couldn't have that anymore, and they went to Jim Crow laws. That went away, and you had...
So they're making that direct comparison in the film?
Oh, 100%.
Okay.
And, I mean, and there is a line there. You know, if you look, where is the type... to the most, now it's referred to as densely populated areas. Well, who was living in those areas?
Right.
That's that. I think they really kind of showed that, which, you know, coming from a suburb in the middle of New Jersey, I don't necessarily see.
Okay, so we had mentioned earlier, because we did our words of wisdom were from Uncle Ted there. How was his appearance?
Short.
Yeah.
It was, they kind of just, you know, mic in his face for a minute at an NRA convention kind of thing. He really wasn't a featured player.
Okay.
And but being Ted Nugent, if you're going to do a Pro 2A documentary, you stick Uncle Ted on the screen. It's just kind of the way they do.
That's right. So, so I've been interested in the film. I plan on getting the DVD when it comes out. I don't live very close to where it's been playing or where I see it's going to play. But I saw a lot of people on Fandango were interested going to see it. I saw some mixed reviews from people who are obviously not for guns and then people who are, who like it, you know, the antis didn't, which is expected. But I also ran across this article in the Washington Post, where it was supposed to be a review of the movie itself, the documentary. And I'm going to read there. Now, the first thing I saw on this was a correction, so I kind of got a sense of where the author might be coming from. And it says, an earlier version of this review stated that Ted Nugent, quote-unquote, switched his hobby from psychedelic drugs to guns and ammo, unquote. Nugent has worked on behalf of several anti-drug abuse organizations, including DARE, and that this version of the article has been changed. Now, when you're trying to when you're trying to slander the reputation of a person who appears in a documentary, I think that's going a little bit beyond, you know, your typical movie review, right?
Right. And, you know, I actually heard an interview with Ted Nugent on the radio a couple of years ago. He was on a gun show, but somebody called in and asked him about a concert in 1977 or some, well beyond anything that any normal human should remember. And this guy, Nugent, was actually able to detail things that happened that night to the caller who was also at that show. Now, the caller was probably a big deal for him. He was seeing a Ted Nugent concert, whereas Nugent's probably played 5,000 shows since then.
Yeah, thousands of shows.
You know, he's a clear-headed man, and he's said, he's like, I don't drink, I don't smoke, never did drugs, never did any of it. It's just not, you know, he was like, I was raised differently. That's just not what, it never happened. So to go for Mr. Jenkins, which sounds made up, but Mark Jenkins. sounds like a name you'd put on a register in a no-tell.
John kind of Smith.
I'm Mark Jenkins. And this is my girlfriend. Don't mind the Adam's apple.
Wow.
But to Whoa. Go that far.
Corey's bringing some edge to our show. Yes.
Did he even watch the movie, or did he just decide that he, you know, didn't like Cop Killer and Ted Nugent used to do drugs.
You know, it's interesting you bring up the point with Ice-T's history, you know, and the rap thing. Because, you know, I'm going to admit, I'm not a huge fan of some of his earlier work. Even though I do like some rap. I mean, there's stuff by Snoop Dogg that I think is fabulous. You know, his delivery. Yes, with Snoop Lion now. That's right. Oh, that I think is great. So it's like, it's not that I dislike all of rap, but I have to admit, you know, I wasn't a huge fan of his earlier stuff. And songs like Cop Killer, I'm kind of opposed to that based on principle.
Right.
But I think he, you know, I've seen him make statements. There was a widely published interview that he did in England where he talks about some of the fundamentals of American gun laws and kind of the culture associated with, you know, how we view firearms. And I didn't think he was exceptionally eloquent in the interview, but he understood, like, he was good at getting across the basic idea to this guy from England who had no concept of what he was talking about. I thought he explained it well, and I thought it was kind of a good thing that he was the narrator for this, because I think he'll be able to reach that wider audience outside of, you know, the guys who are reading Guns and Ammo and
yeah.
And doing you know, different types of training, you know, with the high speed guys or whatever.
Yeah, there will be people who will watch this and listen to it because Ice-T is involved. That if it was a, you know, Ted Nugent or, you know, Trace Atkins was narrating it,
right,
that it wouldn't reach them.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it is, and it really is, the whole movie was posed that Second Amendment rights are civil rights. And that's, you know, if anything out of that first 10 after the Constitution, that is your basic civil rights, your rights that pre-exist the founding of the nation, pre-exist any documents. We are just recognizing a right to, you know, assembly, a right to practice your religion, a right to defend your home, a right not to be secure in your papers and your possessions. Anything violating that is a violation of civil rights. And, you know, never, you know, being of the age that we are, a lot of that fight was fought already. That the to view Second Amendment rights as a civil right is not something we're truly accustomed to. A lot of that coming out of the 1960s, you think of civil rights as a civil rights movement involving Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, the Black Panthers, the Freedom Riders, those groups of people, and you kind of associate it as a time and a place.
I'd agree with that. I think us in the pro-gun community never viewed it as a civil rights thing until pretty recently. I want to say maybe immediately before the Heller McDonald decision, right, because I know that was a big thing for the Second Amendment Foundation, wasn't it, to establish that firearms laws or Second Amendment issues were part of that civil rights universe.
Yeah, every bit as relevant as a right to, you know, as any of your other rights that are recognized and guaranteed by the Bill of Rights.
Absolutely. So we had mentioned the article in the Washington Post, and there's actually another spot I wanted to pull out and get your thoughts on. Mr. Jenkins says, at times, Assaulted seems a movie only an Uzi owner could love. One reason for the title is that the director mounts a sincere defense of the assault rifles. They are, he insists, quite popular and not at all deadly. So, well, I'm interested to see, like, did you see anything in the film that provides a basis for this guy to argue that the film says assault rifles aren't deadly?
No, I mean, the argument and the legitimate argument that comes up is, all right, are they deadly? Well, it's a rifle. So, yes, in as much as any other firearm is deadly and or dangerous, these are deadly and or dangerous. They are, but they're no more so than, you know, Pa's hunting rifle from the 1960s. Like, it's furniture, right, and, you know, black plastic as opposed to, you know, wood and blued steel. Does it really, in the long run, it doesn't make a difference. You pull the trigger once, it goes off once.
Right.
You know, and they did cover that the rounds themselves are generally less powerful than a full-on rifle round.
I guess
if you look at it from there, maybe that's where he was getting
it. So a comparison between, say, a 300 Winchester versus the 223 Remington.
Well, even if you go strictly, you know, military device, you know, your Garand shooting a 30-06 round versus, right, a, you know, 5.56 coming out of a thing, that's a very different round. It's got a different purpose. It's got a different use for a different type of combat.
Man.
But, I mean, you know, if you line up, and then they did, you know, your classic, they shot a, was that in the movie, or was that something else I watched? Well, the, you know, line up your two Gatorade containers, and you shoot one with a 223, and you shoot the other with a 30-06. The 223 pops a hole and knocks it down. The 30-06 blows it up.
Right.
You know, it's a different, so, I mean, I guess that's where he could have come up with that bit.
Yeah, I thought it was a strange thing to throw, yeah, in
it's
there.
It's the same thing. In a confined area, is an AR-15 with a 30-round magazine more or less dangerous than a, you know, Remington 870 loaded with double up buck in a confined room? It's, you could really, I'd make that argument. You know, I'd have that conversation with somebody. I'm personally of the opinion, in a confined space, a shotgun is far more devastating than a rifle, than some rifle rounds. But, you know, it's really the person on the other end of the trigger that makes a difference.
I would say that's where I am too. Is it depends on who's operating,
and for what purpose?
Yeah,
exactly.
You know, a handgun in my home is no more dangerous than, you know, the kitchen knife or anything else. It's just another thing here.
Well, you can say that anything used in an inappropriate manner can be deadly. Sure. A vehicle. You know, if someone wants to run through a crowd of people with their vehicle, they're going to kill just as many, if not more, if they had went in there with a firearm.
Well, I mean, if you walk into a house with a, you know, a 9mm Glock or a can of hairspray and a lighter, what's going to do more damage? And
Oh, boy.
It's going to the improper use.
That's right.
Not fixing somebody's hair and smoking a cigarette. That's
Oh, Lord. So overall impression, the movie, definitely one you're going to pick up on DVD?
100%. It's definitely something I'll have in my collection. It's something I will show to anyone who would watch it, who's open to the idea and wants to learn more about firearms. I've actually, you know, since the Newtown incident, had a few people who were pretty vehemently anti-gun to at least become, not screaming to ban everything, through conversation, just reaching out one-to-one to somebody who knew me from either town or from some other things, you know, because they just, you know, people don't understand. They hear assault rifle, they see something that looks like a, AR or an AK variant and assume it's a machine gun.
Right.
Yeah, no, it's really, it's just a plastic version of a hunting rifle. That's...
It's a semi-automatic firearm.
It is. You know, it's a, and, you know, realistically, most places you can't even hunt with your .223. You got to have at least a 30 caliber round to hunt, depending on, you know, what you're hunting.
Yep.
And what it is.
Well, I mean, some states don't really let you run, hunt with rifles at all, to be honest. I don't think you can. Yeah, you can't hunt deer in New Jersey with a rifle.
You can't hunt anything. I don't.
No, I think the only thing you can do is you can carry. I can't remember if you can carry a pistol or a rifle for shooting a game that you've trapped. You can carry like a .22 for that.
Right, and there is a .22 season for varmint, as it were.
Right, but that's... if you're looking at deer or bear or.
No, even the hog hunts down south, I think were shotgun, were slug only. I don't think you're allowed to use.
Oh, you can use .223 for hogs in some states, I think.
No, but not New Jersey. They had was a hog season because the feral hogs would work their way up there. They have some.
You mean we have delicious wild bacon running around down here, and I wasn't aware of it.
Yes, and you can shoot said bacon and bring it home and do with it as you will.
That's outstanding. I wish I had a pickup to throw bacon in the back of after I shot it.
Free range bacon.
That's right.
Free bacon running around.
See, I'm being green.
There you go, and that is. Free range, organic. Hits all the high points.
That's right.
Local.
It's local.
It's everything.
Wow.
It's,
I got turkeys that walk through my backyard too. I've been thinking about taking some of those in a couple months here.
That would be a delicious trip to that back.
So, okay. Well, Assaulted is still showing in theaters. I haven't seen any details on when it's going to be out on DVD. Have you seen anything?
No, I actually just checked the website before we jumped on, and there's nothing out there. I think they're still trying to get it out theatrically as much as possible.
And that's via tug.com?
Yeah, tug.com. That's two G's.
Okay.
And
so,
T-U-G-G.
So if you want to see the show, you have to bring it to somewhere close to you via tug.com.
Right, and you can search... by the movie title, you can search by your zip code, anything on that Tug is bringing in to your area will show up.
Okay. That's excellent.
I have not seen anything about it out here in Colorado.
No.
I will have to take a look.
You might have to bring it to your area.
I will definitely give it a shot.
In the Denver area. I'm surprised. Denver's a big city. I'm surprised nobody would have done that yet.
I haven't seen anything about it. And I follow, I would believe, all of the Second Amendment supporters here.
Yeah, you're going to have to do a search on the tug.com there to see if maybe someone brought it. They just didn't say anything on the Twitter or wherever.
It ran Tuesday, July 9th. It ran in Denver. It happened.
See, nobody told you. You're not hanging out with the cool kids over there, are you, Mike?
Apparently not.
Tug doesn't translate well into other...
I'd never heard of Tug.com until I saw it for this.
Right. There's not a... They don't do a whole lot to then get the word out.
Yeah, the only place I'd seen it was in the NJ2AS group.
Right, and that we actually hooked up with it initially through Firearms Policy Coalition.
Right.
And that, I mean, they were running, Firearms Policy Coalition was doing showings out in California and some other places around the country, and we kind of said, oh, what is Tug? What, you know, I'd heard of the movie, but then it had this Tug label on it.
Well, because originally the movie was just going to be about California, right? And then they changed it.
I think so. They spent a goodly amount of time with the LA riots and right. Focusing on the Korean community that really went full bore into their Second Amendment rights to protect their communities during those riots.
Right.
So.
Okay. So, I guess that's about going to wrap it up for the topics that we had for the show. Anything you want to add while you're here, Corey?
I think we pretty well covered it for the week.
I know I enjoyed having you on, and I think Mike did too, although I can't see him now. He's got some eagle design up in place of his video.
Oh, my video is not on.
No, your video isn't on. All we can see is a drawing. So.
Like full old school SNL.
Yeah. See, we bring back all the old references here.
That's it.
So, anyway, it was great having you on. As always, we'd like to ask everybody out there. You can catch us on Facebook at Bold Departure, on Twitter. We have the website, bolddeparture.com. That's kind of the central hub of all things Bold Departure. And we'll be talking to you all again sometime next week.
Join the NRA.
Join the NRA and take someone shooting.
Join the NJ2AS.
Join NJ2AS. We love NJ2AS. The I believe the hammer to the ANJRPC's anvil, right?
That's the plan.
That's right. So everybody have a good one.
Thanks for listening to the Bold Departure Podcast. Do you have any questions or comments? Please feel free to leave them at podcast@bolddeparture.com.